Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. We're going to hear later today from some college students. For them and other young adults in the U.S., Osama bin Laden was very much present in their lives, in airport screenings and seared images of towers falling. But we wondered, what about young Arabs? And we want to start there today. We've been hearing that bin Laden, who was, of course, killed Sunday night in that U.S. raid on his compound in Pakistan, was already ancient history to many Arabs. Professor Hilal Kashan of American University in Beirut says that the al-Qaeda thinking of killing those seen as oppressors was already giving way to new thinking for Arabs.
Their own problems are their own making. They no longer identify their problems with Western colonialism and imperialism. They have come to terms with the fact that the devil is living among them. When the young Tunisian man set himself on fire, he was not on a jihadist mission. He was delivering a ruthless political statement to his country's ruler that I am fed up with you. If you continue to humiliate me, I will kill myself.
The professor referring there to the self-immolation of 27-year-old Mohamed Bouazizi last December. It inspired the protests that eventually led to the ouster of Tunisia's president and the Arab Spring we're now witnessing. And by the way, the professor's comments were included in NPR Kelly McKevers' terrific reporting today. And it gives us a jumping-off place. Has Osama bin Laden been replaced, been sidelined by the Arab Spring? We're joined by the New York Times' Anthony Shadid, who's speaking to us from Beirut, Lebanon today. Anthony, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you.
And you've been speaking with young people. Is this sort of what you're hearing? When we refer to the Arab world, we're, of course, not talking about Pakistan, Afghanistan, but, you know, places like Libya, Egypt, where you are.
Well, you know, I think you could make the point that bin Laden might not have been as relevant to Arabs in some ways as he was to Americans. But I think, you know, the point that Professor Kashan was making is an important one, and it is a new era in the Arab world right now. The people who are taking part in Tahrir Square and those demonstrations in Egypt that drew hundreds of thousands into the streets, many of them, you know, hardly remember the September 11th attacks, even if they did. I mean, they were young, you know,
yeah.
8, 9 years old.
Well, you speak with a 20-year-old, just to underscore your point, in Cairo, who says, I have a vague recollection, but it was so long ago.
Exactly. And I think what's so overwhelming to so many Arabs today is the scale of change that's underway. And we're not speaking just about Egypt or Tunisia. We're speaking about uprisings that have turned bloody and could become protracted in Libya and Libya and Syria and Bahrain and Yemen. But there is a sense of a new era in the Arab world. And I think in some ways people might look back on bin Laden's death as the epitaph of an older era, a more dejected era, a more disappointing era. And I think despite the setbacks that we're seeing today in places like Libya and elsewhere, there is the idea of a trajectory that's headed in the right direction.
Well, you quote a professor from where you are there in Beirut at Lebanese University saying, the problem now is not how to destroy something, how you can resist something. It's how you can build something new.
You know, I thought that was a remarkable quote, and I really liked how he put that, because I think it was what many people see as the task at hand right now. You know, when we look at what was the appeal of bin Laden, and I don't think it was ever all that wide-ranging in the Arab world, but he did have some appeal here, and you can't deny that. But I think it came out of a certain helplessness that a lot of people felt. There was almost kind of a knee-jerk reaction to this, you know, decades of frustration with American policy, with American support for Arab dictators, American support for Israel. It was, you know, almost a helplessness, not being able to do anything about it. And here they saw bin Laden in this, you know, very sadistic, you know, what September 11th represented was, you know, somehow I think a lot of people here would have framed it as fighting back, however bizarre that may sound. What we're seeing now in Tahrir Square in Egypt and in Tunisia is actually people able to take control over their lives, take control over their countries in some respect. There's new avenues for change and new avenues for action. And I think that's what's so remarkable about the Arab Spring right now.
Well, but you also point out that people were sort of tired of sort of not just the direction that Al-Qaeda went in, but also how that infected the entire Arab world. And Kelly McGivers, again in her terrific report on NPR today, also quotes Nadim Khoury, who heads the Human Rights Watch office in Beirut, and says Arabs are tired of being punished for one man's deeds.
You've got the invasion of Iraq, and you've got, you know, Gitmo, and you've got Abu Ghraib. I mean, it's all part of this sort of difficult few years that went through. And frankly, for the last few months, this is a region that is feeling hopeful. This is a region that is feeling empowered again.
Anthony Shadid, is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. I think it is that sense of empowerment. I think that's so important because it is people, like I said, taking control over their lives, over their countries, over the way their countries are going to be governed. That there wasn't the space for that kind of action until very recently. And I think, especially for people who have covered the Arab world for a long time, what you often came across before this year was anger and resentment and frustration and a sense of helplessness. That, in a lot of ways, those sentiments, those feelings have, I don't want to say disappeared, but there's definitely a change in them.
Well, but you also write about, by the way, about how some of these dictators that you've been mentioning have actually been the only people talking about Osama bin Laden recently because they're trying to blame some of the uprisings on al-Qaeda.
And that's, you know, part of those old formulas that I think were, that have become ossified in some ways over the past several years, this idea of the divide between East and West, you know, dictatorship and powerlessness. These, you know, these old equations that I think underlined rule or governments here for so long have in some ways disappeared. And one of those equations was that if it's not us, you get the Islamists.
Well, and the U.S. was complicit in that. You know,
in some ways they were, absolutely. And I think what you heard often in Cairo, I think, back in January and February, was that we're tired of hearing this. We're tired of hearing this being used as a justification for you to stay in power. We don't believe you anymore. And I think that break with that idea that the Islamists, especially mainstream Islamists, are not all that threatening to a lot of people in these countries, say Egypt or Tunisia, says a lot. I think what's evolving is a new relationship in some ways between political Islam and the state. And that's probably going to end up being far more important than bin Laden's death itself.
Well, and yet, as you're well aware, I'm sure there are people listening who are saying this is a completely naive, you know, point of view, that there are still simmering resentments, and there were people, you know, calling for revenge.
There are, and I think that's an important point to make. This bin Laden's death, or even Arab Spring, doesn't mark a new era of relations necessarily between the United States and the Arab world. I think there's still deep resentment in the Middle East about American policy, about America's alliance with Israel, about America's past here. It's still a very difficult relationship, and that hasn't gone away. And although you heard it, and I'd say this, though, although you heard those sentiments in, let's say, Tahrir Square, they weren't the dominant narrative. They weren't the dominant sentiments. The dominant sentiments out there were, you know, what kind of society are we going to build? And so while I think it's a very hopeful time, a sense of empowerment in the Arab world, I think it's going to be a very difficult time for the United States because it's going to have to negotiate a new relationship with a region where governments are probably going to reflect the sentiments of their people to a far greater degree. And those sentiments aren't always pro-American.
And we're talking to the New York Times' Anthony Shadid about reaction in the Arab world to the death of Osama bin Laden. He's in Beirut, Lebanon right now. And you mentioned that it may be difficult going forward. That's nothing new in this region. We remember the elections in the Palestinian territories in which Hamas won. Egypt right now, which of course toppled Mubarak, is now looking to normalize relations with Iran. The new government in Egypt has also changed its stance towards Hamas, opening a blockaded border with the Gaza Strip. Are these the kinds of things you're pointing to?
That's exactly right. I mean, I think at some point the U.S. government's going to have to ask itself, do we want relationships with somewhat healthy democracies, or do we want relationships with malleable authoritarian states? And we've had malleable authoritarian states for quite a while. What shape is our relationship going to take with democracies that reflect the sentiments of their people? And like I said, it's not always very pro-American. In fact, there's a lot of resentment over a lot of years. So I think it's going to be a difficult time ahead. And I think the Arab Spring itself is going to be a difficult process going forward.
Yeah.
It already is, exactly. I think what we're seeing what we saw in Egypt and Tunisia was the easy part. What we're seeing in Libya, Yemen, Syria, Bahrain is the more difficult one. And it's the one that I think is going to dominate the headlines for a long time. This is a years-long process, and though I think a lot of people in the Arab world at least believe we're headed in the right direction, it's not going to be an easy path.
Well, I think it's very complicated because we see the Syrian government putting down uprisings there. Hamas, which has its home base in Syria, being asked by the Syrian government to take sides in that conflict, Hamas refusing to do so. You know, there's all these, the web is kind of complicated.
You know, and you have the Saudi, you know, Saudi Arabia, almost kind of the force of counter-revolution right now. It is going to get very messy, and I think just like you're pointing out, this, you know, these changing relationships, these, you know, people looking for allies in different places. It's going to be a pretty frenetic, messy thing going forward. But it's hard to imagine it going back to the status quo before, let's say, January 2011. It's really hard to see those old equations, those old notions of rule coming back into force.
But what happens if the Arab world is in the middle of an Arab Spring and Pakistan and Afghanistan do not enter a spring at all? Osama bin Laden, again, from Saudi Arabia, but based in Pakistan and Afghanistan. What does that do to the equation?
Well, you know, maybe it makes it more nuanced. I'll tell you, you know, as a reporter in the Middle East, the only thing that I often felt tying me as a journalist to Pakistan and Afghanistan was, in a way, bin Laden, was al-Qaeda. You know, bin Laden offered this kind of, I think, very simplistic lens, but a way to kind of frame this entire swath of territory from Morocco to Pakistan under one rubric. It never was that. It was a much more complicated terrain, much more nuanced and much more ambiguous. And I think one good thing coming out of this might be severing that in some ways, having to understand these places on their own terms, you know, in a more fundamental way. We haven't done a good job of that, you know, for the past 10 years. And I think now, in some ways, bin Laden's death may offer another opportunity to do so.
Well, and just in the minute we have, Anthony Shadid, what about the most intractable of all, the situation in Israel and the Palestinian territories? What does Osama bin Laden's death do, if anything, there?
I think little, if anything. I think, you know, the Arab Spring, though, has and I keep using this as shorthand, but I think the Arab Spring has a lot more impact on that, where Israel's neighbors are, you know, the very dynamic of those countries is changing by the day. And it's going to be something that Israel is going to have to take into account as it goes forward and as it looks at whether or not to resolve this conflict.
Yeah. Anthony Shadid, Middle East correspondent for The New York Times, speaking to us from Beirut, Lebanon. Anthony, thanks as always.
My pleasure, anytime.
For the view from the Arab world. Well, as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts about this or anything on the program. You can go to hereandnow.org, click on Contact Us to send an email, or leave a comment right there. And while there, there's something else we'd like you to consider. You might remember yesterday we spoke with Paul Monty. His son, Sergeant Jared Monty, was killed in Afghanistan in 2006. He received a Medal of Honor posthumously. Now his father is asking for donations to buy American flags to place on his son's grave, but also on the 56,000 other graves at the Bourne National Cemetery right here on Cape Cod in Massachusetts.
This is something that, you know, was dear to my heart. When I first visited my son's grave on Veterans Day, I was shocked to find no flags in the graves, and that's when I began a movement to right that wrong.
Well, and when you think about it, each flag costs about a dollar. That's not a lot. But 56,000, that's how many he wants to plant. He has to raise that money by Memorial Day. We have some information at hereandnow.org if you'd like to look into that. All right. We'll later in the program be hearing from college students in the U.S. debating over whether or not there should have been celebrating at the death of Osama bin Laden. All the news is coming up for you here and now.